I'm Celine McKay, and you're listening to the Pure Green Podcast, episode 28. Welcome to this week's episode of the PGM Podcast. Recently, Pure Green ran a survey of our readership, and the results were amazing. You have had the chance to get to know me, especially if you listen to this podcast, and I wanted the chance to get to know you just as well. A large number responded, and after reading the results, I can tell you, our reader, that you will have had a big impact on where Pure Green goes from here. If you're interested and you haven't yet participated in the survey, you still can. I'll put the link in the show notes for you. One of the things you said you wanted more of was practical advice on living sustainably. So with today's show, we're digging into just that, practical and actionable content. One of the things we all have to do is clean our homes. I love a clean, organized home, but actually cleaning is kind of the pits, especially if you're using toxic cleaning products. We touch all the surfaces in our home, and whatever chemicals we use to get that squeaky clean shine ends up on our skin and in our bodies. What's the big deal, you may ask? Well, many cleaners contain chemicals that really mess you up. Endocrine disruptors, carcinogens, neurotoxins, the list goes on and on. It's a difficult landscape to navigate, so today I'm talking with two women who wrote a whole entire book on it called Homemade Cleaners. Mandy O'Brien and Deanna Ford are two busy moms who wanted to cut the toxins out of their cleaning regimen without creating more work. The good news is that you can get that clean sparkle naturally with products you likely already have in your kitchen. It's good for you, the environment, and your pocketbook. In this episode, we dive into all of this and more. This episode is brought to you by the Maidsmith Academy. At Pure Green, we've always talked about how we believe in a handmade culture, and we have always supported small batch producers, makers, and artisans. Maidsmith is an online company that fosters relationships with makers and together with them brings truly beautiful quality items for your home or wardrobe to market. However, Maidsmith found that many makers were challenged by creating a business out of their craft, and so they created the Maidsmith Academy, which is launching an online course called the Sustainable Fashion Business Incubator. The course is 8 weeks long, and in it you will learn how to launch and grow your ethical brand, tell your unique story, marketing strategies, create and grow a client list, how to find funding, and much, much more. You have to hurry, though, because registration is closing June 28th at 11 p.m. If you're a designer or someone you know is in this field, then I encourage you to check it out at maidsmithacademy.com. All right, let's get on with today's episode. I'm really excited for you to dive in. Here's the interview with Mandy and Deanna. I wonder if you could both just tell us a little bit about yourselves. I'll start with you, Mandy.
I have five kids. And we are always busy. Before I had kids, I was a biologist. I've done mass spec as far as chemistry goes. I've worked with, as far as biology, mainly specifying in ecology and even ecotoxicology some. So natural cleaning products were already on my mind before we had kids. And then when we had kids, that became even more important to us. Because when you have kids, you don't want to expose them to a lot of toxic chemicals. But other than that, I'm not certain if there was something specific you were interested in.
No, I mean, just so that listeners have, just to get an idea of who you are and sort of what you do. And so the chemistry, I have a feeling, plays a role in your, yeah. So go ahead.
My husband is a chemist too, so.
Oh, really?
Okay. We kind of straddle the biology and chemistry world there.
Oh, cool. Okay. And with five kids, I can imagine that, you know, I'm cleaning
probably plays a pretty big part in your life. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I'd love to ask you about some of your strategies on keeping a clean house with five kids a little later on. And what about you, Deanna?
I was going to jump in and say that I can attest to the fact that Mandy is one of the cleanest people.
Really?
I've been amazed going over her house that everything is straight and everything is sparkling, and I don't know how she has time.
Oh my gosh, well that's awesome. So so then what about you, Deanna? So what's your background?
Well, before I had kids, I worked in the law. I'm a lawyer, and I clerked for a federal judge for several years, and so I am I love to do research and writing, and that is the background that I brought to this project, is that I like delving into the research papers. And when I was an undergrad, I did a lot of biology and chemistry too. So,
Okay.
And of course, just like Mandy, after you have kids, everything becomes much more important in terms of, you know, exposure to chemicals and what you're bringing into the house. And so, this is such a labor of love for me to learn everything along with, you know, becoming a parent and all that.
Mm-hmm. I've definitely noticed that's definitely, it plays a factor in so many people's lives when they become parents. That's huge, is, you know, and it's funny that we don't think about it in terms of ourselves really at first.
Right.
It takes having a child and actually having your eyes open to everything that's around you and your environment and all of that. I mean, it's a pretty eye-opening moment, and then you're overwhelmed by becoming a new parent and by trying to eliminate all these toxins. It's a crazy time for sure.
Yeah, definitely. So
how did you guys connect then to write this, co-author this book together?
Well, Mandy and I have been friends since my oldest was a baby, so he'll be 8 this year, so almost 8.
Oh, wow.
And I had actually written something for Ulysses Press before, and they approached me and asked me if I wanted to write this book, and I said, only if I can ask my friend to do it with me, because I know Mandy and I know her background, and I knew that she would be absolutely the perfect person to do something like this with. So that's how we joined forces.
Well, that's very serendipitous. They asked you specifically the green cleaners, and you were interested in it before. That
right.
Works out really well.
Right.
Yeah. So what was the process like then for both of you to sort of wean yourself off or remove commercial cleaners and then go to making your own cleaners? Was it something that took time, or, you know, I want to try and set listeners up for success by sort of walking them through how you guys did it and the experience that you had, and if there's any advice that you would have to implement this successfully.
Actually, one of the titles we had considered for the book was Simple Steps to a Cleaner, Greener Home, because we wanted to emphasize that this is not something that you have to do, jump in both feet all at once and become overwhelmed. You can make those small, simple steps and change one thing at a time as you're comfortable and as you learn more. It's not something that, I mean, a lot of people become overwhelmed when they look at everything as a whole, and that that isn't necessary, and that's not the way most people get there. Most people make small changes and then keep doing that a little at a time.
Yeah, when I first started researching cleaning products I could make myself, what I did was to replace products that I used the most. So I figured, you know, obviously what you're putting into the air and onto the surfaces the most is what you want to get rid of. So for me, that was all-purpose cleaner. You know, just having that bottle handy that you could wipe down just about any surface. And that is, like, the easiest thing to replace, because all I started using was water and vinegar. Just mix one solution of water and vinegar up and spray it on the surface, and it's perfect. And if you want to get fancier, you can soak some lemon or orange peel in vinegar for a week or 10 days and then use that to mix it with water, and then it's not that really pungent vinegar aroma. So,
right.
So that was me, was replacing my most used cleaner. But that doesn't mean that somebody else might want to do something that they don't use that often. Maybe something that, you know, look at, see what you have in your cabinets and use ingredients that you already have on hand.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think those are both really good approaches. I mean, we talk about that a lot, Mandy, where we talk about the simple steps and taking things one at a time. It's so crucial. And then, Dionne, I think that's a really good idea about picking what you use the most. And it's amazing how far water and vinegar can take you. So I wanted to talk about a little bit, what is it that make commercial cleaners? And I mean, I don't mean to lump them all in together. It's just easier that way. But, you know, like typically products that you can find in the grocery store aisle, what is it that's so important to know about those in terms of our health? Like, what is so bad about them that we should know?
First, I think you need to understand that you can be the most conscientious label reader out there, and that doesn't necessarily tell you what is in the bottle that you are purchasing. I mean, Dionne, did you want to add to that?
You know, it would make sense. There, our world is so regulated, and so a lot of consumers might think that we're being protected by federal regulations, and that might force manufacturers to use safe chemicals or to list ingredients, but that's not true. Manufacturers of commercial cleaners are not obligated to list all of the ingredients on their products, so you can never know what kind of toxins are present. I think that the only ingredients they're required to list are active disinfectants and known carcinogens.
Oh, my gosh.
And even those have exceptions if they are considered a proprietary ingredient in the product.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, and, like, I think that the burden is, it's such a strange process. It's not a process that was made with consumer safety in mind. So let's say that an ingredient is suspected to be harmful, you would think that the manufacturer would have to prove the safety. No, the burden is on the Environmental Protection Agency to prove that a chemical is unsafe. There are thousands, and like over 80,000 chemicals in commerce, and the EPA only has resources to test a handful of those a year. So we don't know whether all of these chemicals are toxic or not, are harmful or not.
And even if one chemical isn't very toxic in its own, with bioaccumulation, you begin to have massive amounts of all of these chemicals coming from everyone. Dionne, I know you said just the other day about how many pounds of household cleaners are poured down the drain.
It's like 32 million. Now, this is a statistic that one organization has put out. They estimate 32 million pounds of cleaners are poured down the drain every day in the U.S.
Wow.
I don't know where they get that from, but if, you know, even if a fraction of that is true, that number is staggering.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's so funny because for me, this is information that I've known for a long time, and I've lived my way, I've made my own cleaners or you know, for a long time. And still hearing you talk about it and say it's still just, it drives me crazy. I can't even believe it. And so, you know, like the ingredients, non-carcinogenic, those aren't the ones we're interested in, right? Oh my goodness. It's, I mean, so that kind of, it's this kind of thing, you know, that our readers and our listeners talk about that really frustrate people so much because it seems to build barriers really effectively to, you know, being a smart consumer and trying to do your best. But really, that's why making your own cleaners, I mean, it's so effective and so easy. So just helping people realize that is really what it's all about, right?
Right.
Right. And it is easy. I mean, I think that a lot of manufacturers want you to think that it's going to be difficult or it's not worth it. But obviously, they have a bottom line in mind when they say those things.
Yeah. And, well, I mean, it's that perception is easily come by because you look at that list of ingredients and it's impressive. And you don't know what they are. And you assume because these are huge companies that they've put, you know, excessive amounts of money into fine-tuning it and making the best possible cleaning product for you. But really, I mean, I don't even know like what the main motivation would be, if it's effectiveness or if it's cheaper to make or whatever, but it's a complicated thing to figure out for sure. So, you know, we talked about carcinogenics, so like obviously there are ingredients in there that, could you maybe talk about that a little bit? So,
sure.
So just sort of some of those definitions, and then also you briefly mentioned bioaccumulation, dig into that, and maybe what are some of the other less drastic but maybe more commonly seen side effects that you might experience from using commercial cleaners?
Sure. Deanna mentioned carcinogens, and that's basically a chemical that causes cancer. And there are two different types. There are some chemicals that are immediately, that chemical itself will cause cancer. And then there are other types where the chemical itself doesn't cause cancer. However, that chemical, when it reacts in your body, then causes cancer.
Right. Okay.
And then another big topic that you may often hear people mention is endocrine disruptors. And there are so many of those out there that it's overwhelming. Endocrine disruptors basically disrupt the hormone levels in your body. But it talks about all of these case studies about endocrine disruptors and other chemicals that are used in everyday products, and yet we're finding them out in nature and in the wild, and they're causing massive disruptions in animals.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so like dioxin is used to bleach paper. It's found everywhere. It's found in polar bears, who are nowhere near any plants that are using dioxin, and yet it's still there in their body fat. You can't get away from everything. There's just no way. But the more we limit the toxic chemicals that we use, the better it is for us.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, I have heard of that quite a bit. So that's the idea of bioaccumulation where, you know, through one way or another, it gets out of the atmosphere, into the environment, and then it's ingested, goes up the food chain until, you know, eventually ends up at the top of the food chain at really toxic levels
right,
in the body.
Right.
And we're at the top of the food chain, too, in many ways. And so, you know, between the meats that we consume and the vegetables and the air that we're breathing, our bodies are overwhelmed. And so our bodies are finding that it's difficult to navigate all of this onslaught of chemicals, and so we run into problems. So then how about in terms of the environment? So other than packaging, are there main benefits? Well, we just talked about one, to making your own cleaners, but are there any others that come to mind?
By packaging, are you meaning like the disposal of the packaging itself?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, because that's obviously definitely a huge thing. We have so much trash going into landfills, and even recycling doesn't take care of all of that. But there's also the manufacturing of packaging. There are the chemicals that are used in that manufacturing. There are the chemicals that are used in the production of the cleaning chemicals that are being sold. On down the line, even to fossil fuel consumption, to take the product to warehouses and then take that to stores and then take that home, you're bypassing the majority of all of these things. And then obviously the major difference is that you're not using these chemicals in your home to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've talked about that before. What I call it is something like a life cycle analysis. So, you know, it's trying to educate people on the idea that when you buy something, it has a cost outside of just that one physical product. And it's trying to think about, like, take it two steps back, so in terms of the manufacturing and then the delivery, and then take it further too, so what happens to it after you're done. And I think too, people probably don't think about, like you mentioned before, Deanna, about how when you're, you know, you pour some cleaner into your mop bucket and you clean your floor and then you pour it down the drain, and you're kind of thinking, well, because it's safe for me to walk on, it must be safe to dump down the drain. It's a crazy vicious cycle.
Right, and like Mandy was saying, I mean, so many of those just get into the soil and the water, and then they don't break down. So they, it accumulates.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that's something else too. I mean, this whole thing about biodegradable products. I think one thing that people don't realize is that a product often is not, it's only biodegradable in the optimal conditions. That doesn't mean that it will break down in every condition.
Right.
So especially in water. Water actually doesn't break down hardly anything. It just breaks into smaller and smaller bits, unless I'm mistaken in that. And so when something is listed at that, you kind of assume that it's eco-friendly, but it's not necessarily the case. So it's another one that, you know, people should be careful about.
Well, and the packaging too. I mean, so many packages say that they're biodegradable, but you put them in, a big pile with other packages and or whatever, if they're in the trash, they mm-hmm. don't get broken down. They sit there because the conditions aren't right for them to break down the way they're intended to.
Yeah, right, exactly. It's like that. Yeah, it's like that. I read a statistic somewhere about how long it takes a biodegradable plastic bag to break down. Yeah. It's something like 100 years.
Right, exactly.
So it's like, that doesn't exactly, fit the bill.
I think that some of the manufacturers are very well intentioned, but real life doesn't play out the way that they would hope.
Yeah, exactly. And just the way that our landfills are built, like you said. Yeah. Yeah. So what would you say are the main things holding people back from trying homemade cleaners?
I think there are a lot of myths about homemade cleaners. Probably the biggest one is that it's going to take more work and or more energy from the consumer instead of having to spray something and then, the grease disappears, you're going to have to use a lot of elbow grease. But what Mandy and I talk about is cleaning smarter, not harder. So you let the cleaning products do the work. You don't have to just sit there and scrub and scrub and scrub something. Another myth that people believe is that green cleaning does not kill germs. And I think one thing that a lot of people associate with the things that you buy from the store is the smell. And people think, if it smells stronger, it must clean better. But that's not true. You don't have to have some kind of toxic gases coming off of your cleaners in order to make them work for you.
Clean doesn't actually have a smell. It's really a lack of smells, because when an item is clean, it has a neutral pH, and it doesn't have something clinging to it. Our association with smells is often something that we gain early on. I know I tend to use a lot of citrus oils in my cleaning products, and the reason for that is that as a child of the 80s and 90s, Lemon Pledge was very popular.
Oh, right.
And so to me, when I smell lemon, I think, oh, that's clean.
Well, and the irony of the cleaners that we buy at the store is that so much of the chemicals that are in those cleaners are actually toxic. They're causing the air in our home to be full of toxins that can hurt our health. So we're getting the dirt off of the floor, but we're harming our lungs in the process.
I mean, one example is all of the air fresheners that are on the market these days. You want your home to smell nice, and so you buy these air fresheners, and at the same time, you're releasing neurotoxins into your air. And you're not really cleaning anything. You're just covering it up to begin with.
Don't buy air fragrances. Buy a plant.
Yes, buy many plants.
I know. I read a book one time that talked about indoor air pollution, and they said that in some cases the air can be up to 300 times more. I think that was it. It was an extreme number. I mean, I don't think that's the case in every home, but many, many, many times more polluted than the outdoors, even in cities. You know, and this is, it's a scary thought when and it's all because of our use of these products like air fresheners, scented candles, cleaners that are just rendering our home environments toxic. And when really, I mean, the scents are only in there to be pleasant to use, I'm assuming. There's just to cover up those noxious fumes.
They are.
That's what they're doing. They're covering other things up.
Yep. So what are the main components then of most homemade cleaning recipes? Like, I know that there's, well, I know from experience that there are a few that star in most of the recipes. So can you share what those would be?
I mean, they're basic ingredients that you probably already have at home. White distilled vinegar, baking soda, hydrogen peroxide, soap and water, basic things that they're easy on hand. They're inexpensive. These are the things that, you know, several generations back, this is what they were using. It wasn't tracking down some hard-to-find ingredient that you couldn't pronounce. It was using what you had on hand to get things clean. And homemade cleaners, it just really takes it back to the basics.
And what about essential oils then? I know those play a role because they're antibacterial, also because they smell nice.
Sure. But yeah, essential oils are just natural oils extracted from plants. And there's a lot of research that shows how plants, their oils, have practical applications. You have oils that are antibacterial, antifungal, antiviral. So when you add oils to the acids and the bases and the soaps that you use in cleaning, it boosts their cleaning power.
And is there a way to tell if an essential oil is good, like pure, or not? Are they all, because they're labeled that way? I mean, again, it boils down to reading the label, right?
When it comes to essential oils, it takes a little sleuth work. I mean, talk to the company or talk to people you know about what they know about a company. Because just like with cleaning supplies, where they can put basically what they want on the label, a lot of essential oil companies are doing the same thing. There are a few companies right now saying that they have therapeutic grade essential oils. There's not a set standardization for essential oils, so there technically are no grades. There's no therapeutic level. It's just it's just basically advertising and marketing. There's no correspondence to, you know, a set level that tells you the quality of that essential oil. So when you're looking at essential oils, some of the things you want to look for are that the people in charge of the company are actually essential oil practitioners or specialists, so that they know what they're doing. They've developed a relationship with the distillers that they get the oils from, and they know what plants are being used, where those plants are from. They've had it tested as far as mass spec goes, so that they know that the essential oils they are receiving and purchasing are actually essential oils and not with a lot of fillers. If the company has a lot of controversial stuff going on, personally, I would steer clear from it.
Go ahead.
I mean, you want the things you want, definitely want to know, is it needs to have the Latin name so that you know exactly what plant it's coming from. The country of origin, a lot of the essential oils on the market are not indigenous to North America, and so they don't grow that well here. And that's going to affect the quality of the oil. And then also the growing method.
Okay, so like organic or not, something like that?
Yeah, or what condition it's grown in. And a good essential oil company will be able to tell you that.
Okay. Well, that's all really good to know, because, again, it's one of those products that I worry about a little, because I know that there's not as much to go on. So it's good to know what to look for and what to ask. So what are some examples of essential oils that are antibacterial that people could maybe start with?
A good basic essential oil that it's a good one to start with is tea tree oil. It's antibacterial, antiviral, antifungal. Personally,
and it's a good disinfectant.
It is. One of the the main uses that I use it. We have a basket in our kitchen where wet wipes and things get tossed before they go to the laundry room, and it can kind of get a little stinky even changing it, you know, dumping it out every day. And so whenever I wash stuff like that, I wash on hot with soap, and then I throw tea tree oil in there too, just to give it a little boost and kill off anything that might have started growing in there.
Another good one to have on hand. I think the two essential oils I would recommend to people to start off with would be tea tree oil and lavender oil. Lavender is also very versatile. It's antibacterial, antifungal, and you can use it for so many different things. Plus, it smells so good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I also really like oregano, and even though that one smells a bit stronger, but it's super potent, though, like effective. And then rosemary, thyme, I must be.
Peppermint.
I like those kinds.
A good one.
Yeah, peppermint. Yeah, peppermint and lavender together are so nice. So when you talk about soap, you're talking about Castile soap?
There is a difference between soap and detergents. Detergents
okay.
are going to be petroleum products.
Mm-hmm.
They have many similar qualities, giving you sudsing and soap, but that's not necessarily something you want to use based off of the production. Soaps are not all Castile soaps. Castile just means plant-based. So soap in general is made with an organic fat. And if you go back to traditional soap-making processes, that often utilize animal fats. So Castile soap is just the fats found in plants.
Okay.
And like there are different companies that sell specifically soap and liquid soaps, and that's generally what you'll find is Castile soap.
Okay. Well, that's a good distinction, the detergent versus the soap. My favorite brand of Castile soap is Dr. Bronner's. It's widely available, which is nice. And they have, some of them are even infused with essential oil, so that's, you know, saves you a step, I guess.
I have a lot of those in my counter, in my kitchen cabinets right now.
So
yeah.
Do I.
So I also wanted to ask you about vinegar, because I recently learned that vinegar, it's not all vinegars are created equal.
No, they're
and
not.
That, yeah, and I think that, you know, when you talk about the home cleaning products, vinegar comes up a lot, rightly so, but I just wanted to make that distinction. So what is it about vinegars that we need to know and that differentiates a sort of a good one versus a quote-unquote bad one?
Okay. The vinegar that we recommend in the book is white distilled vinegar. I mean, I have a lot of vinegars in my kitchen cabinet, apple cider vinegar and a whole slew of different ones. If you use apple cider vinegar, because of the coloration, it can possibly stain, which is why we recommend white distilled vinegar. Not all white distilled vinegars are made the same way anymore.
No, exactly.
Some of them are now petroleum-based and derived. And you don't always know if the vinegar is made from petroleum or not, because it won't necessarily say on the label. So when you are buying white distilled white vinegar, you need to look and see if it has the word grain on it somewhere. So you're looking for white vinegar made from grain alcohol.
Okay. Yeah, that's something I did not know. And I was lucky because I found a brand close to me that is distilled. They call it from plant, or I forget what they call it, but yeah. Plant. Maybe is it possible that it's sometimes made from corn? I don't know.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
And
okay.
Heinz. I mean, Heinz is a really common brand, and that is made from grain alcohol.
Okay, well, good. That's good to know. So what about some of the other ingredients? Like, I've always been curious about baking soda, or, well, that would be the main one, really. Is that a naturally derived product? Is there anything that we need to know about that in order to choose like pure baking soda, or is it pretty all just standard?
Baking soda can be natural baking soda, or it can be just regular baking soda. Natural baking soda is mined and then ground into a powder. Regular baking soda, which is generally the cheap baking soda you find at the grocery store, and it doesn't mm-hmm. say natural, it's made in a lab. It's all sodium bicarbonate. So whether you want to pay more for it to come naturally or pay less for it to have been the same reaction to make in a lab is kind of a personal decision. But the product itself is the same. It's sodium bicarbonate.
Okay. Well, that kind of, in this case, I think it makes more sense to buy the man-made version because mining it is it's a destructive process. So this is one time where it seems like maybe the more optimal choice is to buy it man-made.
And, well, there is some mining involved in making it because of the ore that is used to make it. But it's kind of a personal choice. For me personally, I'll spend less on baking soda so that I can spend more on maybe some nice essential oils or something.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. So one thing that I'm curious about is your book contains a lot of recipes. So what was the process like to develop all of these recipes and test them all? And I mean, I don't know, how many are there in the book? Like, do you have a number?
I don't know if we do or not.
Good question.
It's like, must be over 100.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So what was the process like to come up with all of those recipes? I mean, yeah, recipes, cleaning recipes.
I mean, you start with the simple steps. You replace something, and then as you become more comfortable, you're like, oh, what if I throw in some lemon oil with this? And you experiment. And it's not building from scratch. I mean, as we've said before, a few generations back, this was commonplace.
Yeah.
So looking back and seeing what other people have done, looking at the research, and understanding the chemistry is also part of it. Vinegar is an acid, whereas baking soda is alkaline. So depending on your application, you may want this ingredient or that ingredient. If it's a stubborn stain, you may want some of the mineral action from baking soda. So understanding that basic chemistry used in cleaning makes it easier to come up with recipes.
Well, and we say in the book, we try to explain all of this in the book. This is what this ingredient does, and this is what this ingredient does, and this is how they work together. And then in each individual recipe, a lot of times we say, here are a bunch of different essential oils you can choose from. So we're not saying you have to use every recipe in this book exactly as it's written. We want people to take these and to tweak them and make them their own.
Right. So, Mandy, you talked about that basic chemistry, like when to know to use an acid versus an alkaline or a base or whatever. So what are there some, like, are there some tips that you have, like, to sort of help us know, or I'm curious about it personally.
I mean, it really depends on what you're cleaning.
Okay.
Cleaning blood out of carpet, my go-to, it's hydrogen peroxide. Vinegars, you may dilute it, but you're not really going to counteract it. So it depends on what you're cleaning, and it depends, too, the environment that you're cleaning. I'm going to clean toilets, and with 5 kids, you can imagine how quickly those can get ugly. I'm going to clean toilets differently than I'm going to clean a coffee table because it has different needs.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I was just more curious about how you said that, you know, some cases call for an acid, whereas others call for a base. So what is it about those specific? Is there anything or no? Like, I'm just reading into it too much.
No, and the pH has a lot to do with it because you're trying to neutralize whatever you're cleaning.
Okay.
So that plays part of it. Part of it, I don't want to call it elbow grease because it's not requiring a lot of work, but part of it is just washing.
Yeah.
You can get off a lot of dirt and grime and microorganisms just by washing, which is why we talk a lot about washing hands in our house.
Yeah, it's just that mechanical action, right?
It
like
is.
Obviously that's going to make a difference. Yeah, so can you, one of the recipes that you talk about, and we shared it in the magazine as well, is your Better Than Bleach spray. So why is it that that works so well? And what is it, actually, as well?
It's not actually a single spray. There were some tests done at, I believe it's Virginia University, but I'm
Virginia Polytechnic Institute.
Thank you. So they compared bleach, and bleach does kill a lot of microorganisms, but it's toxic.
Yeah.
So it's not really something you want to use a lot, especially around young children who are much more susceptible to the effects of toxic chemicals. So what they did was they would spray an item with vinegar spray, so a 50-50 aqueous solution, wipe it off, and then spray it with hydrogen peroxide, just the 3% solution that you find at the grocery store, and then wipe that off. You can do it the other way, too. You could do hydrogen peroxide and then vinegar. I just tend to do vinegar first. And it actually kills more microorganisms than bleach does. And it doesn't have the toxic fumes.
Wow. Okay. So when you say wipe off, are you using like a wet cloth or just a dry cloth? Does it matter?
Either will work. You just don't want to mix the two together because then you can have some fumes. It's not a good combination to do together. That's why you do one and then the other after.
Okay, but just wiping it off, even if you're not using a ton of water, that's enough to get...
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Okay, well, I personally have tried that, and it does work great. So outside of that one, is there a recipe that you got, each of you really loves from the book, and is your kind of your go-to?
I have a couple. One of them is my favorite because it smells so good. It's the sweet cinnamon sink scrub. That's kind of a tongue twister. And it's just cinnamon, baking soda, some kind of citrus essential oil, which isn't even necessary, and you just scrub your sink with it. And you know that your sink can get kind of grimy, and you know it if you don't clean it very often, there's a color.
Yeah, residue. Yeah.
Yeah. It just gets it right up, and it makes your whole kitchen smell amazing.
Oh, nice.
And I usually follow it with some vinegar just to make that baking soda fizz up and react. My other favorite recipe is the disinfecting wipes, and that is because I think that was one of my last holdouts. Like, I don't even know the brand name. It doesn't matter. I had some brand of the disposable disinfecting wipes in both bathrooms and in the kitchen, and it would be the one that I went to all the time, but they smelled so bad. And so finally I got rid of them, and all I do is I have a mason jar, and I cut up a couple of T-shirts into rags, and you have like a cup of water, some vinegar, some soap, and whatever essential oils smell good to you, like I said, usually lavender and tea tree, shake it all up, and then whenever you need something, you open the mason jar, grab a wipe, wipe it up, and throw it in the laundry. So that's one of my favorites just because I use them so much.
Right, yeah. I mean, wipes, oh boy. I mean, I think those play a big role in a lot of our lives, especially with kids. I mean, they're everywhere, right? And so that's a really effective way to reduce waste as well as whatever petrochemicals, endocrine disruptors, everything that might be on them.
Right.
Yeah. So are you using like a big mason jar then to
hold
them?
I actually use a small one because it's easier to get your hand in and out of them. I've tried them in the big mason jars, but the big mason jars I have usually have a smaller neck, like a smaller mouth.
Okay.
So I find it easier to keep it in the small ones. Also, you don't want to keep that solution forever. You know, I mean, eventually it will start to, it can not be good anymore. So, you know, if I keep it in a small jar, then I'm replacing it every so often.
Right. And how many wipes can you fit in there?
Oh, like, my gosh. A lot. At least.
Really?
I'd say probably 20. I mean, my wipes are really thin. Like, I use old
T-shirts.
And they're just really thin. And I mean, a lot of times those wipes you get are huge, and you don't need that much. So
it's true.
Yeah, they're pretty small.
And then one recipe I use a lot is the foaming soap solution. Because obviously we're encouraging our children to wash hands when you come inside, before you eat, after using the restroom. But young children especially don't always understand the amount of soap to use. And cast aisle soap is so concentrated, and it's expensive too. Really, you just need a little tiny bit of it. And so we make up foaming soap solution probably every week, and put it in foaming soap canisters, and then the kids use that, and it works really well. And the recipe for that is 1 cup of water and then about 3 tablespoons or so of soap. And then we tend to add some essentials, a lot of times lemon.
Yeah.
My personal preference, or orange, just to give it a little bit of scent. And we go through a lot of that.
Yeah, that I remember that actually from the magazine, and I was really curious about it, so I tried it as well, and it worked amazing. But I had a foaming soap stuff, I don't know, I had it around for some reason, and so I had it. But where can you buy foaming soap dispensers, like, easily? They're just around.
You can order them from different soap supply companies, or, you know, buying one at your local store and just reuse.
I reuse it. I think mine have left it for a year or two before some start breaking down. Probably.
Yeah.
The only thing you want to be careful with is if you have some very young helpers who decide to add water to it, it will probably kill the soap dispenser.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
It needs that lubrication from the soap. And if you want to get really fancy, you can even toss in maybe a teaspoon or so of glycerin just to make it a little smoother.
All right. Cool. Well, I hope listeners try that one on all of those, because they all sound really awesome. So my last question to you is actually about cleaning and how you fit that into your lifestyle. So, like, with 5 kids, Mandy, for example, and Deanna said that her house is sparkling clean all the time.
I would go that far.
Well, from an outsider's perspective anyway. So did writing this book on cleaners make you experts on keeping your houses tidy? Or, like, sort of what are your top tips on that? Because, I mean, I think that's something people really, really struggle with. Like, for me, my Sundays are usually spent cleaning, and I begrudge that because I'm like, oh, this is my day off. I don't want to be doing this.
Right.
And it takes a whole day to catch up on a whole house that's been neglected for most of the week. So Do you guys have strategies that you've worked in that help you? Yeah, okay.
I think I would go crazy if we waited for a particular day to clean. that would make me feel very anxious. Now that my kids are a little bit older, I have a 7-year-old and a 3-year-old, and we try to at least a couple times a week have a quick timed family cleanup. So we turn it into a contest. We're trying to beat the clock, and we go room by room, and I usually put like 7 minutes on the timer on the stove, and we race around picking up and cleaning together, and everybody's laughing and having fun, and it doesn't feel like a chore. But we do that a couple times a week, but mostly we just pick up as we go. Like, I don't go from one room to another without having something in my hands. So if I keep it clean, then when I have to go and actually take a rag and clean along a floorboard or wipe down a table, it feels easier to me because things are picked up.
And cleaning in real time is a really big thing for me. When you leave a mess for later, even if it's not a big deal, that time to dry and harden, and it just makes everything so much more difficult. And even if I'm in a hurry, if I take that extra 5 seconds to grab a wet rag with a little bit of soap and wipe down the kitchen table with all the sticky fingerprints and jelly and everything, when I come back later, it's already clean and I'm not trying to scrub, you know, stuck on food or anything else. Bathrooms get cleaned at least once a week, if not twice, because otherwise those can get really bad really fast.
Well, and when you're cleaning it that often, they're not bad. It's not like you're going in and scrubbing your bathtub for an hour because you're doing it more frequently. You're taking 3 minutes to give it a quick scrub, but then the stuff isn't crusting on. I mean, it's not ever going to get to that state of dirt. Another thing just for the bathroom, like, and for everywhere in the house, like, I use shower curtains that I can throw in the washer, or I have rugs that I can throw in the wash. I mean, things that are easily, they're easily cleaned.
Yeah, for sure. Well, cleaning as you go, I mean, it's one of those things. You just have to work it into your habits, and then it's not a big deal.
And I will say, not everyone in my family has that same attitude. When I cook, I'm cleaning at the same time. So when I'm finished cooking, pretty much everything is clean already. Mm-hmm. I'm the only one in my house who does that. Everyone else who's old enough to cook, cooks, and then, oh, look at this huge mess.
They're life lessons. You learn as you go.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that lesson is what I'm learning, too. I tend to be a disorganized cook, which leads to a bigger mess, whereas Jonathan is my husband, who's the main cook in our family. He is a natural at it, and he's really skilled in the kitchen, and so it just seems to flow better for him. But I'm getting better at it, because it really does suck to finish your meal and be like, oh, look, this is not
Another
so fun.
Another thing is that we declutter a lot.
Clutter
it's very stressful for my family to have so much stuff around us, and it's also a lot more stuff to clean. So we like to keep things more simple, and every so often we go through and we declutter. If we don't need it, we're not using it, then we pass it on to someone who can, and that really helps cut down on the cleaning too. And what we do have, I found that we need a specific place for it, and that place has to make sense to the people who use it. So our art cabinet is close to the kitchen table where it gets used the most often. That way the kids are actually putting stuff back in the art cabinet, whereas if it was somewhere far away, I can guarantee you that stuff would not get put up.
Yeah, that's a really good strategy. And I know, declutter, I mean, stuff is responsibility. The more you bring into your life, the more you're responsible for. And it's, I mean, definitely it can impede on your life really quickly. So that's something I'm really trying to do as well. It can turn into a bit of an obsession, I found.
Yes, it can. I'm still waiting to read the book by the Japanese author on decluttering. Mm-hmm. I can't think of the name.
Yeah. The Magic of Tidying Up, I think.
Something like that. Sounds great.
Yeah, I know. She has a whole methodology behind it. She's someone I'd love to have on the podcast as well.
Sure,
one day.
I've read several articles, and I've implemented some of her ideas, and it feels good to get rid of stuff and to make more space in your house and in your life.
Yeah, absolutely. So just before we go, did you have anything else that you wanted to share, or are there any spaces online that people can go and reach out and connect with you, or what's coming up next for you guys?
Mandy?
I don't know. Honestly, I have so many projects in mind right now, and my youngest is 17 months, and so a lot of those projects are on hold right now.
Yes, understandably.
I don't have anything for myself right now. I'm in the middle of editing a book that my dad is writing, so that's taking up some time. And both Mandy and I homeschool, so we spend a lot of time just...
We do a lot of organizing of field trips. And
we do. We both run homeschool cooperatives in our respective cities, so... It's a lot of
information.
Yeah,
I didn't know that you guys homeschooled. I was homeschooled.
Were you really?
And yeah, and it was, wow. I mean, I think it's one of the things I value the most about my childhood.
I love meeting adult homeschoolers and hearing about that.
Yeah, it really, I mean, oh gosh. And I asked myself if it's something I could ever do, and I'm not sure. Becoming an entrepreneur sort of... I don't know. So I'm working on figuring all that out right now. My daughter's only two.
If you can do this, you can homeschool.
Yeah. Well, you know, my dream is to find a group of parents who would be willing to, like, do one day each,
okay.
You know, it'd be like, how cool would that be if, like, my strength is, like, say, science or creative writing, and then the other person is math, and then you each focus on your strengths for the day, and then...
I'm part of that co-op where we take turns, we have a couple of subjects that we do, and then we take turns teaching it, so everybody gets to put a little bit of their spin on whatever the subject is for the day, so... Kind of similar, but we really do love them.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Maybe I'll have to have you guys back on to talk about homeschooling.
We can talk about that a lot.
Yeah. No, I'd love to. So,
Mandy, that's
all right,
our next project right there.
There you go.
Yeah. Focusing on homeschooling. I think, you know, gosh, when I was being homeschooled, we live in a small town, but still, like, there was, like, 5 families, maybe. And now, in this same town, the homeschooling group has, like, 50 families.
Oh, it is.
So,
yeah, it's becoming so much more popular and so diverse, and it's a great time to homeschool, I think.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I was just going to say that I just finished another interview with an author who wrote a book about managing technology, and... Technology in the classroom is such a scary thing. It's so invasive. And anyway, so homeschooling seems like a really good, it's a whole other conversation, but it seems like a really good way to mitigate that.
as far as where to find us online, my personal blog is codenamemama.com.
Okay.
And Mandy's is,
livingpeacefullywithchildren.com.
Okay, awesome.
Again, I haven't been writing much.
we both write for naturalparentsnetwork.com. So.
Okay, awesome. Well, that gives readers a couple places to go to. And then your book is available at most bookstores.
I think so.
I think so.
The big ones for sure. And,
yes.
And then on Amazon. And...
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, exactly. And it's so worth it. I highly, highly recommend it. It's been a valuable resource to me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's been really awesome. So thank you both for coming on. I really appreciate you taking the time and your expertise on this subject. So, a huge thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us on.
So that concludes my talk with Mandy and Deanna. I hope you found it helpful and are looking at vinegar and baking soda in a whole new light. Be sure to pick up a copy of their book. You can get it at any major bookstore or online. You'll find it hugely helpful, and soon it'll be dog-eared and worn just like mine. As always, we've prepared show notes for you over at puregreenmag.com/podcast/homemadecleaners. We've also got a couple of recent posts on the Pure Green site that cover some of this, so check for links to those as well in the show notes. If you feel inspired, please leave a review over on iTunes for us, and if you'd like to strike up a conversation with us about this episode, you can do that over on Facebook at facebook.com/puregreenmag. Also, a big shout out once again to our sponsor, the Maidsmith Academy, for supporting our show and for the valuable work that they're doing. Find out more about them at maidsmithacademy.com. Thank you so very much for listening. I'm Celine McKay, and this is the Pure Green Podcast.